Okay, so welcome everyone. It's nice to see so many faces again. Nice to see you back after a week off, catch up week, not catch up, but catch up. So this learning event that we're starting this week is called RM 101. The long title is Manage Risk in Rural and Remote Communities. So it is not really designed for super urban communities, but I think some of your communities within communities might fit a lot of what we're talking about as well. I'd like to acknowledge that I'm hosting this call from the traditional territory of the Kwamundun First Nation and Tahn Kwachin Council. So as we did last week, if you'd like to, or the last time we chatted, if you'd just like to post your name, your organization or community, and if you want to do a land acknowledgement, that's great too, into the chat. And then when we do our introductions, we won't include all of that as well. So if you pop it in the chat, that would be wonderful. So this learning event, RM 101, is the first of three learning events in a risk management series. So some of you, like Igor, who are also working on the management certificate, will have already done two other ones, and this is actually the first one. So Igor, you'll see how it fits in the other ones that you've completed. The concept of risk management can sometimes be overwhelming for us in recreation. You know, there's so many things that we're supposed to worry about, from safety to things going wrong, to things breaking, to people getting hurt. And so sometimes it's really hard in the programs that you're running to know where to start and how to tackle issues and concerns. In this workshop we just had on Tuesday in the Yukon, we were talking a lot about gender diverse populations and intersectionality and risks around recreation and those challenges. And it was a really interesting conversation. I learned a lot, especially from younger people, people who are younger than me in the room. So, you know, that's a different angle on risk that we don't always think about. So our risk management learning events have been designed to help you as leaders fulfill your responsibilities to be careful with anyone who maybe uses your facilities or is using a facility with you that you're borrowing or using from another organization. And this doesn't just include indoor spaces, but also outdoor spaces as well. And it's also designed to help you be responsible for the people who are participating in the programs that you run. So I won't share the slides just yet, but on slide 5, when I do show it, it shows the learning objectives, and this learning event, RM 101, it'll encourage you to think about the process and really buy into the process of managing risk in community recreation. It will help you identify and assess the probability and severity of different types of risks. And then we'll talk about applying a process and using some tools that will help you manage risk in 5 key areas. And I think in my experience delivering this learning event, which I've done for almost 10 years now, you know, people tend to think of risks in certain areas, but not in other areas. So we'll try and get you a really broad base so that if there's something that maybe isn't at the forefront of your mind, you're still considering it in the work that you're doing. So today what we're going to do after a really brief introduction, so Cadence popped his introduction into the chat. If everyone else, if you're on the computer and you can pop your introduction in the chat the same way, just who you are, where you're from, and maybe acknowledge your traditional territory. If that's a practice that you do, I know it's not a practice in Nunavut, and we have Breton joining us from Nunavut. So it's a little different in Nunavut because Nunavut is Inuit or Indigenous land, and it's governed by Indigenous people and an Indigenous government. So it's a different practice there. So go ahead and pop that in the chat. And then when in our round of introductions, I just have a really quick question for you. And so I'll post that. We're also going to look at the first week's content for this learning event through a scenario, and it'll be a simple after-school scenario that most people can relate to in recreation. And then we'll talk about how we can measure risk, and I'll explain why that's different for all of us in a moment. So thank you, Caden and Kaylee and Quentin and Breton, for popping your introductions in the chat. If you guys keep going ahead, that would be great, because then you get to know who else is on the call. So thank you. So for a round of introductions, after you've popped in the chat, what I'm going to do is I have a list today by alphabetical order, so I might just use that, which makes us jump around a bit. We've done by territory and province before, so let's choose alphabetical order. So I think you can mostly see people's names on the screen, so you might have a good sense of when it's coming up to your turn. And what I'm looking for you to do, I'll pop this in the chat, is what I'd like you to do is just say your name, so you don't have to give your whole introduction that you've put in the chat. But when we come to your name, I just want to know if you have something that I'm going to call a sweaty palm issue. And by sweaty palm issue, what I mean is something that makes you nervous or uncomfortable because you sense that you're doing something that's kind of borderline and something maybe not so great could happen. So for me, my sport background is actually alpine skiing, and my sweaty palm issue was always weather related. Is it too cold to get people out there? Are we going too far away from a warming space that if somebody gets cold, but also like getting injured far enough away from help or things like that? So that was something that made me nervous in how I both instructed and coached alpine skiing. So you don't have to have a sweaty palm issue. If you don't, you can listen to each other's or you can pass. It's totally up to you. But the order I have is there's lots of A's in our group, the name starting with A. But it puts Acacia, you're on the spot first, then Adam, then Amory, and I don't think we have April with us today. And then we'll go to Breton. So, Acacia, do you have a sweaty palm issue, something that makes you a bit nervous in the work that you do? I don't know about everybody else, but I can't hear you.
How about now?
Yes, perfect.
Okay, great. I had hit unmute, but it didn't seem to actually unmute. I guess my sweaty palm issue would be sometimes weather-related, or I had one instance where I was on a Nordic walk / leisure walk that we do, a program that's basically just hiking in the woods before it's snow enough to do snowshoeing, and we had split up the group into people who like to go slow, so the leisure group, and the fast Nordic walkers. And this day, for whatever reason, only one person had registered into the leisure walk. And so it was just on me to be with this one person. And ideally, I wouldn't want to be alone with just one participant because it's not a very good group setting of the safety aspect of being in a group. And there was a bit of miscommunication on that day, and I haven't been trained as much in this particular stuff. So even though I have first aid, I wasn't necessarily trained on best strategies for communication and keeping the group together. And they ended up being worried that we were lost. We weren't, so they couldn't get a hold of us, and it became a bit of a sweaty palm issue for me where I felt uncomfortable doing that again until I had figured out how to prevent that type of situation in the future.
That's great. That's a really good example of outdoors and different levels of ability, right, can cause a higher level of risk when you're dealing with that, but also your own knowledge and experience and things. So thank you for sharing that. And again, if you just want to listen or you don't have something that comes to mind right away, feel free to just say pass. I'm totally okay with that. So Adam, how about yourself? Do you have something that comes to mind as a sweaty palm issue?
There's nothing in my current position that comes to mind, but prior to actually heading to Recreation and Parks here, I was managing, instructing, coordinating several training programs that included field safety training, so dealing with snowmobiles, chainsaws, firearms, Arctic winter survival, boating. But through all of that, the biggest sweaty palm issue was always my instructors driving around the territory. Especially in the winter. So managing the risks that come with that, with bad weather, with bad highway conditions, that was something that despite the fact we were doing a lot of high hazard activities, it was getting to the training destination that always seemed to be the highest risk activity.
Yeah, and that's a good point. And for those of you who aren't familiar with the Northwest Territories, they actually have more roads in the winter than in the summer. So there's, you know, ice roads and things like that. But similar to probably many, many rural and remote places in our country, you know, roads outside of the main centers aren't as well maintained. There's not the same level of services. So that driving or getting places to your programs can also be a risk. So thanks for sharing that, Adam. Amory, how about yourself? Do you have a sweaty palm issue that comes to mind that you'd like to share?
No, not really. Just like kind of going into like what the other said, traveling with like no winter tires and like stuff like that.
But, yeah, like that winter that travel thing. Yeah, no, and that's good. It's just to sort of trigger some of the things that we're all dealing with, and it helps us have a conversation. So winter travel is a big one. Do you do quite a bit of that in your role?
Not really this past month, just because, like, things just kept getting canceled. But usually, yeah, we would travel in the winter.
That's great. Thanks for sharing. Bretton, over to you, and it might be different because Nunavut, for those of you who don't know, Nunavut has 20 kilometers of paved road, or unpaved road even, right? The road to nowhere, and that's it. Yeah,
hello, everybody. So I think my example maybe is a little bit different than the others. Sweaty palm situation, just for me, recently, I guess, has been because I'm new to a management role, so we've been doing a lot of, I guess, organizing events and activities for the community, and a lot of the times we're collaborating with different organizations in the city. So I get very stressed out when some people are not very, I guess, structured with their planning, and a lot of things fall into place last minute or the day before things actually happen. So our department, we try and plan things, you know, weeks or months in advance, and then a lot of times you're depending on local organizations, and sometimes they end up not actually pulling through until the last couple of days. So there's a lot of times where there's some unknowns.
Yeah, and that's so true about working with rural and remote communities as well as in your larger center of Iqaluit is, you know, life changes quickly, and sometimes it's out of our control, and sometimes people have a different way of defining time, too. It might not be on your time, it might be on their time, and you know that we have to take that into an account with our planning. So thanks, Bretton. Okay, let's go to Caden, and then Igor, and then Jasmine, and Josh. So over to you, Caden. Do you have something that you can think of that's sort of that sweaty palm issue?
No, I never get sweaty palms. I'm just kidding. I'm trying to think of it. For some reason, it's hard for me to think specifically, so I don't know if that means it happens rarely or too often. I don't know. I'm a very type of, maybe I'm reactive, but I'm kind of a, like, go with the flow, try to be optimistic and positive person, so maybe I don't see the negativity or the danger of all of it. I think just kind of speaking from my experience with our organization, I'm sure our staff have shared this, or will share this, the travel, like a lot of, we have a lot of remote communities, winter roads, so just the uncertainty sometimes of, Bretton just talked about planning, and Ingrid mentioned canceling. So that is so real right now, unfortunately. I don't know what it is, but I've been trying to plan some trips and with communities, and it's been tough. So maybe for me, that's the thing, is like the uncertainty of planning, trying to pre-plan and knowing how communities operate. Everywhere is a little bit different. Maybe that's what it is. Yeah, a little bit frustrating sometimes. I'll go with that.
Yeah, and that's an interesting take on risk, too, because if you think about it, if you're planning a number of programs and activities and events, and especially if you're a major not-for-profit organization like the Manitoba Aboriginal Sports and Recreation Council is, the risk for you is when things get canceled is if you're not using your funding, what are your funders going to say back? Well, that is a pretty significant risk too, right? So thanks. That, you know, so this conversation makes us think of risk in different ways. So thank you for sharing.
Absolutely.
That's great. Let's go to Igor and then Jasmine and then Josh and Kaylee.
Thank you, Caroline. I would say for me, the possibility of injuries are always there, especially on our premises when we host programs or events. And I always think about the possibilities of injuries and what if. So that is what gives me a little bit of sweat pass. And by implementing the informed consent that we will be learning about that, I think in the next 2 weeks, we can lower that risk and we can manage somehow. So for me, mainly the possibilities of injuries.
That's great. And in some of our small communities, and you know, we don't necessarily even have emergency medical services on hand. That's the reality in the Yukon right now, and I'm sure it is in other small communities. So, you know, then you're dealing with an elevated risk if there's injuries. How do you deal with it without having an ambulance to respond or people to drive the ambulance or anything like that? So thanks, Igor. Now, is it Jasmine or Jasmine? Like, could you tell me how to pronounce your name properly as well?
Yeah, no, it's just Jasmine.
Okay, perfect. I just I wasn't sure because I really like the Y in it. It looks really nice when you write it out. So thank you. Thanks for clarifying.
Oh,
and Jasmine,
you.
Do you have something that's a sweaty palm issue for you in your role?
Yeah. So with my position, we do face a lot of obstacles and we're forced to kind of be a little flexible. But I think the sweaty palm issue I've had that I haven't yet experienced in yourself is many cancellations with no accommodations in the community, because I know that a lot of the communities we work in, there's a constant flow of different facilitators and presenters that stay in the accommodations as soon as they leave. So, yeah, if weather doesn't work out and then you don't have access to a place to stay after, yeah, things can get interesting.
They sure can, because you don't want to be sleeping in a car at minus 40. Like, that is not a good scenario. And sometimes there's not other safe places in a community to stay, right? So you need to watch out for your own safety as well when you're facilitating and working in other communities. So thank you very much. That's great. Let's go Josh and Kaylee and then Quentin. So, Josh, do you have anything that's that sweaty palm issue?
Yeah, I think with a lot of the coaching that we do, we work with a lot of kids, and so I think the biggest, you know, I might be nervous about kids getting injured. So when I may be coaching hockey or about the kids, some of them can't skate very well, so you don't want them falling back and hitting their head or slamming into the boards or running into one another. So that's worry about to make sure everyone's doing okay if they hit into one another and make sure no one's injured.
Yeah, and probably, you know, different sports too, like hockey is probably a very different experience than, say, badminton or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
Absolutely. And then equipment comes into play too. Are their skates sharp enough and do they have the right protective gear too? So, thanks for that, Josh. Mm-hmm. Kaylee, how about yourself? Is there anything in your role that makes your hands sweat a little bit, that makes you a bit nervous? I'm not sure if I can hear you. Sorry to interrupt. Can you guys hear Kaylee or is it just me? I know. It might be, I think you're using your microphone on your, it might not be connected. No, I can't hear you yet. Let me go to Quentin and then I'll come back to you. Just if you go down to where the audio symbol is, you might be able to click on it and see that you're connected. And then we'll come back to you after Quentin. So Quinton, how about yourself in your role? Is there anything that causes those sweaty palms, the nervousness?
I think I'm probably just going to play kind of off what Josh had said about injuries in the sports and stuff. Mine is, like, my role is in the city, so I run sports programs in the city, and injuries for players obviously can happen. I don't really have a sweaty palm issue, but I guess, like, one thing potentially is that, you know, being a coach, and it doesn't matter what sport it is, you kind of have to make the judgment call of whether a kid can play due to, like, an injury. So, like, sometimes I get kids who, like, maybe hit their knee or something on the ice, then they come off and they're like, oh, my knee's banged up. And then, like, a shift later, they're like, well, I want to go play because, like, it's fine. It's not bad. So you have to, like, make a judgment call on, like, whether it's something that could get worse. And, you know, because a lot of these coaching stuff now puts a lot of the responsibility on the coach. So if you're the person who said, yeah, you can play, and then it gets worse, then potentially you're liable for that. Or maybe someone hits their head and you're not sure, like, how to properly diagnose a concussion or something, and now this kid wants to play, but you're not sure, like, maybe they have a concussion or something, and who knows if it got worse to a point where, like, you know, it turned really bad, like, how could that potentially affect you as the coach? Because maybe you're liable for the fact that you let them play, even though they potentially have a concussion or something, or a bad injury that got worse just by letting them play, so.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that, because concussions are definitely a big one that over the last 20, 30 years, we've come out with different concussion protocols in sport. I don't know if recreation leaders follow them in the same way, but probably should be very aware of that too. So thank you. And Kaylee, I'm guessing that it's not working for you to speak because I did see. So if you want to pop something in the chat, do you want to try that or do you want to try talking again? Okay, just go ahead and pop in the chat. That would be great. So yeah. An old computer. I know it's frustrating sometimes. So thanks. Just pop what works for you in the chat. Okay, so what we're going to do now is I'm just going to share a little bit of background information. And I just wanted to say that, as you can see from this initial conversation, how each of us experiences risk and how we respond to risk is individualized. Okay, so it can really make it tricky to manage risk when you're working with somebody else in the same organization, because two people, so two of you, like let's say Josh and Quinton, you guys work together, you both might kind of see risk or think of risk, or your comfort with risk might be different to one another. And so then sometimes one thing that if somebody thinks something's risky and they want to address it in one way, and the other person's like, well, no, the kids need to have that experience. So it can be challenging in an organization to navigate or negotiate where that fine balance is between too much risk and not enough risk. The reason I had you do activity number one is to see how your comfort levels with risk. And this was a really important, interesting chart for me, because nobody is really uncomfortable with risk. But nobody is like, extreme risk is thrilling. So I would say it looks like 5 people said that they enjoy some risk, moderate risk. 4 people don't mind some risk, and 1 person's a little uneasy with risk. So it's interesting to see that you're sort of in that middle ground. Sometimes I get groups and they're spread all across there, and I'm like, why are they into like extreme risk being thrilling? That's a little bit different, but let's put you in the middle ground, and I am going to ask you to do this again at the end of next week and see if anything's changed for you. So as you can see, although risk and types of injury might be unique to every situation, the risk management process is one that we can use to manage any type of risk in many different situations. So I'm going to share my slides here just so that you can have a look, and it might make it a little easier as I talk through them. There's the right one here. Okay, so there's some real basics around risk management, and rather than making this a really complicated thing that you're like, you know, there's so much to think about, we try and break it down to an easier process that works for you depending in any different situations. So there's in activity two, or actually the slides will introduce you to three basic concepts and five areas of risk, which are actually on the following slide after this one. So the three basic concepts are really important, and they're described here. But basically, just think of them as foreseeability. It just is your ability to think that something might happen. So Quentin, you were just talking about a child who maybe had hurt their knee, and thinking ahead to, if I let them play again, is that going to make it worse? So that's foreseeability. We also have the concept of risk rating. And so that's, how do we measure risk using our gut instinct or numbers? And sometimes people might wonder, why is it important to measure risk? Well, part of risk is making sure that you don't get in trouble for something. So if you take the time to measure it, write it down, and figure out how to maybe address some of those risks, whether it's through policies or whatever it happens to be, it sort of, I guess it covers you if something bad does happen. So, for example, a cold weather policy, you know, we might have determined that if it's colder than minus 25, we don't do outdoor activities or you don't travel to communities because the risk is that much higher. And then as long as you follow that through, you know that, oh, at minus 10, maybe the risk isn't the same as at minus 25. And the idea of risk controls is that we want to put things in place to reduce risks. So things like policies, like a cold weather policy. So we're going to go to the next slide, which shows the five key areas of risk. And I think that you've already kind of touched on some of these. You've talked about sort of the supervision or the instruction, a little bit about training of different people. Igor mentioned documentation. A number of you have mentioned that being able to respond in an emergency. And then we touched on facilities and equipment. So let's look at a scenario. I'm going to read a scenario, and I'd like to ask you, I'm going to go around sort of in, like ask two or three people to reflect on each one of these things. So let me put the scenario on the slide. Hopefully this is large enough on your screen. So what we're going to do is we're going to talk about what influences the chances that something bad might happen. So we've got our five areas of supervision or instruction, training, facilities or equipment, documentation or emergency readiness. And so what I'm going to do is I'll start again at the beginning. Like I'll ask two or three people if they have any ideas related to, we'll start with supervision or instruction for this scenario. You can pass, you can listen, I'm totally okay with any of those. Or you could, if it's not your turn and you want to contribute, pop your idea in the chat. So let's think that we have this after school program. There's 15 children. It's taking place on a playground, and there's one youth supervisor without first aid training. So if we start at the top of the alphabet again, actually, let's go in reverse order just to not put everybody on the spot. So going in reverse order, that would put Quentin first, and then Kaylee, but Kaylee, you can maybe pop in the chat for this one, and Josh. So Quentin, Kaylee, and Josh, can you think of anything related to instruction or supervision or instruction that might make us feel nervous in this situation or that might be kind of risky? Quentin, any thoughts from you?
Just the fact that it's one youth supervisor with 15 children. That's quite a bit of children for one person. Like the ratio per supervisor is not ideal, I think, and I guess it depends on like how responsible the youth would be and how are the children, are they well-behaved or are they kind of erratic in behavior a little bit or is it, you know, potential for some injuries that happen as a result. Like you can't keep an eye on 15 children, depending on what's going on, like it's hard to do that. So obviously that has a lot of risks just based on that. Josh,
that's great. Yeah, so Kaylee, if you have anything to add, go ahead and pop it in the chat. Josh, any other thoughts from you around the risk related to supervision or instruction here? And probably not instruction because it's not really a program, right? So we talked about what Quentin mentioned is the quantity, right? The ratio of the supervisor to the number of children. Is there anything else that you can think of?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with Quentin that when you have that large ratio of children to an instructor, it can become quite dangerous because they're no longer able to effectively manage that group. So it's a bit dangerous. It can maybe get out of hand. Another thing maybe would be like on a instruction level, when you have that many kids to manage, it can be quite difficult, especially for maybe younger kids who are a bit rowdy. So maybe if you don't have enough instructors, you're not able to effectively facilitate what you're trying to do. So if you're trying to say teach kids how to skate, and there's too many kids to sort of teach them effectively and give them the time that they need, they're not going to be able to improve as effectively as if you had maybe a couple of more just helping you facilitate.
Yeah, exactly. So sort of what it is you're trying to do also influences the ratios, the person's ability to instruct versus supervise. Kaylee's popped in there the risk that there's no first aid training, the playground definitely. So, you know, that person without any training doesn't have it, the ability to perhaps deal with the injury or might not know what to do in that case. So let's move on to the next part that is about, I'm going to ask you about, I think you guys have alluded to training here with the person not having training. So let's look at, and I'll pop it in here, facilities and equipment, which is our next category. So I'm going to ask Jasmine and Igor and Caden if you guys would comment on what you see are the risks here related to facilities and equipment or potential risks, because we have to kind of imagine. So working our way backwards through the alphabet, Jasmine, is there anything that comes to your mind about equipment that might be risky or the facility, which is a playground? And I'm not sure, sorry, I can't see everybody because I've got my screen share on, but I can't hear Jasmine, so maybe you might be still muted if you wanted to pop in the chat, that's fine. Let's go to Igor. Igor, do you want to comment on facilities and equipment and how that might influence the risk in this situation?
Yes, of course. The first that comes up in my mind is the risky playground, as I call it. It might be a few holes here and there, a small one though, but it can cause injuries for children that jump around and having fun. The equipment, we should make sure that the inspection of the equipment is done properly. And the equipment is well fixed to the ground, and it doesn't increase the level of risk in this scenario. Thank you.
Great. And so the inspection might be something that perhaps somebody with more experience has to do, because I'm guessing if the youth doesn't have any first aid training, they might not have training in inspecting the equipment either, right?
Of course, yes. Yes.
Yeah. Thanks for that, Igor. Caden, do you have any other thoughts about either if we call the playground an outdoor facility or the playground equipment, how any either of those can influence the risk in this situation?
Well, with not many facts known, just what's here, I'm thinking of, it is outside. What's the weather? So, and like temperature. So, is it really hot? That could be unsafe. Is it winter and things will freeze and get slippery? So that's a little bit of the safety of the equipment or the maintenance.
do you have an indoor facility that you could go to instead, or an indoor space as an alternative? Or, like, do you walk through that at the beginning of the shift again? It's not just a little first aid. It's like, do they have any training? And one person to inspect that or to supervise. So that's kind of what came to my mind with the playground situation.
Yeah, I like that. And at this time of year, I don't necessarily think of too hot weather, but definitely, like, especially this past summer, there was a lot of heat issues across the country. So, you know, that's really relevant. And we had a conversation this past week. We have the Yukon River that flows through Whitehorse, and one of the playgrounds, it was built by Canadian Tire Jumpstart, and they didn't want to put a fence around it, but the city of Whitehorse required a fence because of the proximity or how close it was to the river and the danger of kids, like, running over to the river or anything like that. So I'm pretty sure some of your other communities have similar issues with the, not just the playground itself, but the environment around the playground. Like, are there busy roads around there, or are there woods where kids could run off in and get lost or hurt or something like that? So thanks for that, Caden. Okay, so Breton and Amory, you guys get to tackle documentation. So I'll start with Breton first, and then Amory, is there anything around, and there might not be, your answer might be, I can't think of anything, and that's totally okay too. Is there anything you can think of around documentation that might influence the riskiness in this situation? And we'll start with Breton.
I guess I just think of, like, off the top of my head, especially with the youth not having any first aid training, would, you know, all of the 15 children, is there contact information for, like, an emergency contact for them in case something did happen, you know, so that way they could call the child's guardian or parent or whoever it may be. So that's just the first thing I think of.
Yeah. So without that documentation, you can't reach somebody when you need to. So that's great. Thank you. Amory, is there anything that comes to mind for you around his documentation?
Not really. Like, I was going to go on to what he just said, but other than that, not really. Like, maybe the waiters do, so, like, you're not reliable.
Yeah, so do you have, like, not just who's the emergency contact, but do you have the parental or guardian permission in writing for that child to be there in that program? So that's definitely a really important piece. So thanks for mentioning that. Okay, so Adam's busy hauling 20 boxes, so won't be able to hand it for this one. And Caden's put in, this is a really great point, to sign in attendance sheet, for sure, because what happens if you were expecting 10 kids and all of a sudden you have 15 and you're not sure where the extras are from, or maybe you were expecting 20 and another youth to supervise and you end up with 15 and don't know who's missing. So thank you for that, Caden. Acacia, is there anything that comes to mind for you around emergency response planning? And I think that Caden just gave a hint with access to a cell phone. Is there anything else that you can think of?
Yeah, so I think part of the attendance sheet stuff too is making sure that you check it right before the program. Like, I have that happen a lot where somebody registers last minute and they don't know where the program is being held, and that makes it feel like a more of an admin thing where you're like, oh, I'm not sure what to do when someone registers last minute and they're on the attendance sheet and then the instructor doesn't know what to expect them. That kind of issue can come up. And I think with children, you need to be even more careful, given that, you know, if someone drops their kid off thinking they're registered and they're good to go, and then they've already left because they think there's 15 kids, but there's actually 16 because the 16th registered late and you didn't know. That's something that is also to be, like, came to mind when we were looking at this.
That's great. Thank you for sharing that. And thanks for Quentin and Caden popping in the chat there. So Quentin has said also that you might have the paperwork with the phone numbers on there, but if they've changed, which often happens, or if there's a different person picking up a child and you can't get, there's all sorts of things around that. So as you can see from what we've shared on this one, there's definitely five areas that we have to consider when we're talking about risk. So I'll just touch on each of these briefly because you can dig into them in a bit more detail. So when we're talking about supervision and instruction, generally we want to think about higher risk programs, so hockey versus badminton, but also higher risk people. So elders, seniors, young children might be higher risk than what perhaps adults are, or older children or youth, things like that. Things like swimming might require a higher level of supervision with certified lifeguards and instructors. Sometimes things like gymnastics require more supervisors. And things like the playground, so we didn't touch on this, but the sight lines in a playground, so can you see from one side to the other very clearly? Is there equipment in the way that's blocking your vision? That can totally affect the supervision as well that you might need to have. For those of you who are doing activities that involve minors or skill development, having written lesson plans is a great way to at least show that you're doing what you're supposed to be doing. So if something gets questioned and you have written lesson plans or activity plans or coaching plans, that can really help with risk. Training that you can see on the next slide here. Training is very situational. So sometimes we think that everybody should have first aid or everybody needs something, but it's useful to think of who are your program leaders, who's involved in it, and what type of training do they really need, and make sure that you have perhaps like a training plan. So for an organization you might, with a number of staff, you might have a training plan so that you can figure out who needs first aid training, when they need to redo it, those types of things. Documentation on the next slide. A documentation is, and I've said this lots of times in other learning events, it shows that you're doing what you say you're doing. And if you end up in a court of law, documentation will hopefully save you. But it's way better to have things documented than not. So, you know, you've mentioned registration forms, there's medical forms, informed consent being mentioned, policies like travel, and also, as I just mentioned, written lesson plans can be really helpful. We don't get so much into things like waivers in this learning event, but they are addressed in our other two risk management learning events that will next be offered in the fall. So if anyone's interested in digging into those in more detail, that's where we do that one. If you think about facilities and equipment, so we talked a little bit about, Igor mentioned the inspection part, and we do have for playgrounds, the Canadian Playground Safety Institute, and they offer training and certification for inspecting playgrounds specifically. But it doesn't really matter, like Clinton mentioned hockey, and Josh, you mentioned hockey, and even making sure that kids' protective gear is up to code and there's no damage to it is a really important part of inspecting the equipment that you're using. And also checklists, like Acacia, you just mentioned, making sure that you've got the number of kids that you think you have. So as somebody popped in the chat, like an attendance form that you can check off that they're there, and then you check them off when they get picked up. So that type of thing is really important as well. And then emergency response planning, it's about being prepared for the possibility of an accident or an incident. So, you know, having an emergency response plan, like who's going to take charge, where are you going to go? I often think of fire drills that we've done in buildings before. That's one example. But you also might want to, review what do you do if you're traveling to a community and you have an emergency. So, you know, if you get broken down on the side of the road at minus 30 and it's going to be an hour before the next vehicle comes by and your cell phone doesn't work, you need to have an emergency response plan for that. It's really, really important. So I'm going to just take a quick look quickly here at the first step in the risk management process. And I'm going to ask you to start thinking about something that you might want to share. And we only actually have 10 minutes left, so I might get you, some of you to share and some of you to pop it in the chat. So in the risk management process, slide 16 shows that our first step is to rate the level of risk. And what we do here that's really important is we think of risk by our programs, our facilities, and participants, and we look at what's high and what's low. I've done this in person sometimes, and I get flip charts on the wall, and we look at programs, facilities, and participants, and they might not all apply to you, but then you can list what's higher risk and what's lower risk. So starting to piece things apart can be a helpful way of looking at it. And then what we want to do is when we're doing that, when we're looking at rating the level of risk, we can either use our gut instinct or measure risk with a number. So if we use our gut instinct, you can use something as simple as this, and this is actually used for avalanche ratings in the mountains and things. So it's a fairly common way of sort of using our gut, but also assessing the probability that something will go bad and the severity of what something would be if it did happen. And keep in mind when you're doing this that we all sort of have a different tolerance, or we all see risk in a different way. So what I might place in the green zone, somebody else might place in an amber zone. And that's okay. At least it's making sure that we have conversations around it. So if we look at, there's a sample risk rating that you can look at, ranging from ice carving in the green zone to kite skiing in a red zone. But we can also, if we're having a hard time figuring out where it fits, we can rate risk as a number. And so we use probability, the chance of someone getting hurt, and severity, how serious it could be, and we times those two numbers. So we usually use them on a scale of 1 to 5. So 1 is low and 5 is high. So that's a way to make it a little bit more consistent, and it also helps explain why you've decided that a certain type of activity is a little riskier than another one. So when you're rating risk, again, you're looking at the probability and then the severity if something does happen. So what I'd like you to do before we wrap up the call is, in your mind or on a scrap piece of paper, I just would like you to think about something that could happen in a program that you have, and figure out the probability whether something bad could happen or not, and then figure out the severity of if it did. So you've all shared some examples already, but just sort of take a specific one, and as you think of something in your mind, I'll talk through an example right here. So you can look at here that we have tackle football. So I am not a football player, but I can imagine tackle football sounds a little risky. So as compared to a chess tournament, I might say that there's a pretty good probability with tackle football that something might go wrong. And so that one is rated as a 4. And then I think, okay, so let's say in tackle football it's more informal. Maybe people aren't wearing all the same equipment or gear, maybe because of the bodily contact. The severity might be worse than what would happen in a chess tournament. Probably a strange comparison, but. So I've assessed the level of risk at 4, or the probability at 4, and the severity at 4, and that gives me 16, which makes my risk rating high. So is there anyone, I'm just going to put it open to the floor. I'm just wondering if anybody either wants to pop in the chat. You can say what your activity is and tell us what the number is that you come up with, or I'll just quickly go around as well and just tell us just your activity and number, just so we kind of get an idea of what that might look like. So we'll go backwards to, we'll go forwards in our alphabet this time. And Acacia, do you have something that comes to mind, and what number did you come up with your risk rating?
I think I came up with, it was like a 6 was the risk, was the total risk after doing the 2 times 3.
Great, so kind of moderate, not too high, right?
Yeah.
That's great. And what was the activity? Was it the hiking that you were talking about?
Similar. It's a kids' sledding program. So there's 2 different versions. One of them slower and meant for like mobility and stability, and you're out there for less time than the original kids' sledding program. So there's a slightly different number for each program. I think it's very low for the mobility and stability, and slightly higher for the kick splitting, just because they go at a faster pace and they're up there for longer. So the risk of like frostbite or potential injury is higher in the more fast program.
Okay, that's great. Thank you for sharing that. I'm not sure if Adam's back, so I'll go to Amory. Amory, did you have something that came to mind, and what was the risk that you attached to that, or the number? Amory's got hockey in a 12. That sounds pretty reasonable to me. So maybe the probability isn't as high, but the severity is higher. So thanks for that, Amory. Breton, how about yourself? What came to mind for you, and what number did you end up with?
I actually was doing hockey as well. So I think probability, I was going to put it at around 3 as well. Severity, I was going to put it at 3 just because the league up here specifically that I'm talking about, you're not allowed to take slap shots and there's no contact. So I think the severity of injury goes down a little bit with that.
That's great. And Amory, maybe you can pop in the chat if you were thinking of perhaps youth hockey versus adult hockey, more rules, less rules, because that also influences your rating. So Breton's coming up with a 9, you're coming up with a 12. So you can see there's variations in there depending on what you're doing. Thanks, Breton. Caden, how about yourself? Did you have an activity that came to mind and a risk rating as a number?
I haven't done much programming lately, mostly virtual or with adults that wouldn't involve a lot of risk other than maybe losing connection. but I referee basketball quite often. I'm very, very busy with officiating. So going to basketball, on the officiating side, we do have to do kind of risk management before and after and during. So is the facility safe? I basically, this pickup has 5. I put a little lower, maybe a 4, because there's probably going to be something, like even if it's an injured finger or an ankle or a little bump to the body. Severity, both at 4. Severity, up 2. So I'll put it at an 8 just to go a little bit higher from my experience.
Great, thanks. That's great. Thanks, Caden. And I just got time for 2 more, so if anybody else wants to pop theirs in the chat as well. Igor, do you want to share what you came back? See you, Jasmine. See you next week. You have to go. Igor, what did you come up with for an activity?
Yeah, I would say I would mention a volleyball activity where the probability I would put 2, while the severity I would put 3, which equals 5. So it's somewhere on the lower scale.
That's great, thank you. And Josh, what was your activity and the risk rating that you came up with?
Yeah, so we were doing a sort of just like fun gym games. That's kind of a simplified description of what we were doing. With the kids running around, so maybe they can bump or crash into each other. So the probability of that is probably like moderate, so around 3. And then the severity of them potentially hitting into each other, if worse comes to worse, is maybe like a 3, probably somewhere between like a 6 and a 9 is like the level of risk in this program.
Yeah, so between low risk and moderate risk. And that makes sense to me for an indoor sort of gym supervised program. So thanks for that. Kaylee, if you wanted to pop in the chat, because I know you had the audio issues, then And Quentin, did anything come to mind for you? Like, did you have an activity and a risk rating for it?
I'm mostly involved with hockey, so just like the other two, probably around the 12 mark, like a 3 and a 3 or 3 and a 4 kind of thing, moderate to high.
Yeah, and you can see how hockey might change. Like if you're in a rink working with, as Amory's got junior hockey, I think Breton was perhaps referring to adult hockey. But if you take it out and you do pond hockey where maybe the ice isn't as consistent, then that could influence it too. So that's great. Thank you very much, everybody, for contributing to that sort of conversation. I think it gives you a really good idea that there's no right or wrong answer here, but it's just important to think about the risks that you might encounter and to rate them. Next week, we'll be looking a little bit more about how to manage them, whether we should avoid them or put things in place to get rid of them. So you do have a required learning activity that's due on Sunday. And it basically, if you participated in this conversation, you basically just did the activity. So your task is to just pop it in the forum that we have as a conversation and maybe take a look at the handouts as well. And for those of you that are in the same organization or same community working on similar programs, I'm very happy if you want to get together and work on these together, ideally in pairs, because by the time you get 3, 4, or 5 people, it gets a bit harder to contribute. So just let me know, like Josh and Kaylee, I know you guys have been working on some things together, and it's really great because you put both of your names, so I really appreciate it. And Caden and Nolan had done that as well. So thank you very much. Mesi Cho Guanashish in the Southern Haudenosaunee language that's here. If you want to pop in bye in the language or goodbye or see you next time or whatever works for you in the chat, I really appreciate the conversation and I'm looking forward to talking to you next week. If you do have any questions, please just hang on after I stop the call recording and I'm happy to answer them. So otherwise, have a great rest of February. Talk to you on February 29th.